and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 20th, 2017. The commander of soldiers accused of raping aid workers and killing a journalist at the Terrain Hotel last year is dead.
Look, Akachak died, I think it's now almost 6 days since he died. He died as a natural cause. Was reported found dead in the castle in the morning.
And Lama Call is in Washington to ask the Trump administration to help save South Sudan from collapsing.
The U.S. has been an important partner to South Sudan from the very beginning, actually even before South Sudan became an independent state. So we believe that they have a big role to play, either singly or even within the Troika or in the UN Security Council.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commander of a group of soldiers accused of killing a journalist, raping international aid workers for hours, and destroying property at the Terrain Hotel last year has died. South Sudan military officials say Lieutenant Luka Akechuk was found dead in his jail cell nearly a week ago, but his death is now just being reported. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
SPLA acting spokesman Colonel Santo Domich says there was no sign of foul play in Lieutenant Akechuk's death.
Luka Akechuk died, I think it's now almost 6 days since he died. He died as a natural cause. Was reported found dead in the castle in the morning.
Domich says no post-mortem report has been delivered to the army. Military authorities have not said whether an autopsy on First Lieutenant Luka Akechuk was ever conducted. Akechuk, a member of the Presidential Guard, was a chief suspect in the case that has highlighted the difficulty in bringing perpetrators of human rights violations and other crimes to justice in a country plagued by nearly 4 years of deadly conflict. Domich says Akechuk was accused of instructing soldiers under his command to rape aid workers at the Terrain Hotel complex last July.
In a state for him to stop rape or looting, because he was a commanding officer for those for that unit at that very time. But in his state, one of the victims reported that he was even the one facilitating rape. He was the one telling the soldiers, rape this, rape that, and this.
While defense attorney Philip Sanyang calls Akechuk's death shocking, he says it will not jeopardize the court proceedings against the other defendants. Sanyang is also questioning Akechuk's cause of death.
If the army is saying that it's a natural death, and the natural death happens with reason, so there must be a postmortem report that shows this person died of natural death, died because of this thing, and so it can't just be a testimony of verbal testimony by anyone. There must be medical record showing that this person died because of this.
The specific charges against each of the remaining suspects remains unclear, along with the evidence that led to the charges. The military tribunal overseeing the case demanded that the women accusing the soldiers of rape return to the country in person to testify against the accused. Most of the aid workers left South Sudan shortly after the incident took place. Sanyang says Akechuk was an extremely important witness to the prosecution's case against the soldiers, but there is enough evidence to convict the other soldiers.
Most of the charges levied against these persons were things that were done jointly. So in an event of, in an absence of one person, it cannot lead to the throwing out of the other charges against the other accused person. So we know it has created a gap, but still we are hopeful that the case is still on well.
The military court trying the suspects is expected to cross-examine one of the alleged rape victims next week. At least 5 women, all foreigners, said they were raped during the attack at the Terrain Hotel. Army spokesman Domich says court proceedings are expected to reconvene next week, but will be held behind closed doors. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The leader of the National Democratic Movement says he wants the Trump administration to rescue South Sudan from what he calls a total collapse. Lamar Cole says the situation in South Sudan has not improved since a new wave of fighting erupted in July 2016. Cole says the August 2015 peace deal has not been implemented and there is no end to the suffering of the people of South Sudan.
Well, I am here in order to meet the U.S. institutions, including the administration, to explain to them the situation in South Sudan and the pathetic situation there, and they try to share ideas on the way out. As you know, the U.S. has been an important partner to South Sudan from the very beginning, actually even before South Sudan became an independent state. So we believe that they have a big role to play, either singly or even within the Troika or in the U.N. Security Council. So for these reasons, they are a very important factor to be considered in the search for peace in South Sudan.
Your coming to Washington is just on time because the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Nikki Haley, will be traveling to South Sudan at the end of this month.
Yes.
Have you spoken to her about your concerns regarding the peace process and the situation in South Sudan?
Well, not yet. I haven't met her yet, but we had communicated through other channels.
And what is your message to the Trump administration as you are here in Washington? What are you trying to tell them?
It is the same message we are putting out to everybody, that the situation in South Sudan is pathetic. It is, the country is being run down, is on the verge of collapse. And if people don't take quick action, it may disintegrate. The insecurity is spreading by day. The economy is collapsing. All these things point to the fact that the current regime in Juba is running the country down. So we need to take a quick action.
What kind of a quick action are you proposing?
Quick action, of course, in terms of peace. You know that this government has been the obstacles all along. It has refused to implement the 2015 peace agreement.
Dr. Lam, this narrative that the peace agreement has collapsed and has not been implemented, that the people working with President Kiir, including First Vice President Taban Dengai, don't agree with that conclusion. And they always say that they are implementing the peace agreement. Even the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission has been sending press releases talking about how the peace agreement is being implemented. And here you are saying it's not being implemented now.
Well, it is for the public to determine who is telling the truth. But let me tell you one thing. First of all, the agreement being implemented now is not what was signed in 2015. By then, the agreement said we should have 10 states. Now we have 32 states. The agreement said we should have cantonment of forces in specific areas. This has not been done. The agreement said there should be downsizing of forces in Juba. It was not done. The agreement says that the monitoring body that oversees the ceasefire should travel freely. It is not being done. I can go on ad infinitum listing things that have not been done. So there is no question that the text of the agreement is not there. Secondly, the stakeholders who signed the peace agreement is there. The name you have mentioned was appointed by Salva himself. So if one stakeholder can appoint other stakeholders, it means that it is not the same agreement.
IGAD, Special Envoy for South Sudan, has been consulting other parties, including your party, your group, on efforts to revive the peace deal. What were the issues that you discussed with them? What were your concerns that you raised to this group?
Well, before getting that, you mentioned something important, that the consultations are to revive the deal, which means the deal is dead, isn't it? So when you continue pretending that it was still there and now you are admitting that it must be revived, then definitely you are coming to our point of view that the peace agreement was dead.
That's Lama Cole, leader of the National Democratic Movement and former Minister of Agriculture in the Transitional Government of National Unity. He was speaking with me here in Washington earlier today. Cole is on a tour in the United States to meet officials about the situation in South Sudan. The South Sudan Council of Churches says the upcoming IGAD-led high-level revitalization forum aimed at reviving the 2015 peace agreement should focus on the root causes of the South Sudan conflict and how it has affected ordinary citizens and not the interests of political leaders and their soldiers. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
The Council of Churches General Secretary, Reverend James Oyet, says the church welcomes IGAD's efforts to resolve the conflict by revitalizing the peace agreement, but says the upcoming forum should first focus on alleviating the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
All efforts towards peace must look beyond individual interests and those of narrow political perspectives. The root causes of conflict and grievances must be addressed, and an environment for building a long-term future for South Sudan must be created.
Reverend Oyet urges the government, the rebels, and the various opposition parties to have the political will to end the conflict.
Key is for political will to exist, and thus for any agreement to be honored, while all actors must urgently seek to bring about a resolution before the current timeline expires. We understand the challenges that can come in, but let us give peace a chance.
Reverend Oyet says the conflict, which began in late 2013, has caused massive insecurity across the country, the collapse of South Sudan's economy, and has led to rampant human rights abuses.
There's a lot of these targeted killings of people. People are forced to loot just to survive. And then there's other blunder human rights abuses that affects the community. And even women become targets, you know, some are being raped.
Reverend Oyet says the church is leading an action plan for peace, which includes advocacy for peace and the creation of neutral forums where people can voice their grievances to try to achieve healing and reconciliation.
The advocacy pillar is to provide a means to influence opinions and policies towards peacefully resolving the conflict. It's towards the changing of the narrative. You know, the narrative today is of that of revenge, that of killing, that of fighting, and so on. To change this narrative to that of peace.
Reverend Oyet says it is imperative that the government allow more freedom of expression and freedom for the media so that citizens can talk about their grievances without fear. He says that can be done through conversations on the radio and on other media outlets. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN mission in Abyei condemns the latest violence in the disputed territory. Find out more when we return.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who in your family do you seek advice from?
I'm free with my dad. He's like my best friend. So in case of anything, I run to him. I call, we talk, we meet up. So I'll say my dad.
I normally seek advice from my mother because she's the only one who's always open to me and I'm always open to.
I do seek advice from my parents, first of all, and then from my eldest brother who are ahead of me.
Seek advice from my uncle or my brother because they are the people who are responsible for me. If my mother is missing there or my father is not around.
I can seek advice from both my father and my mother. I've been with them since my childhood, and they have been guiding me in this and that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, or UNISFA, says it is deeply concerned about the recent spate of attacks on unarmed civilians in the disputed area of Abyei, causing the deaths of at least three residents. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
In a statement released on Wednesday, UNISFA condemned the recent wave of armed attacks in the Amiet market area in the disputed Abyei region. UNISFA spokesman Daniel Adekera says two attacks on civilians by unknown gunmen in the Abyei Amiet market area last Friday left two women dead.
Unknown gunmen just opened fire indiscriminately. The motive we still are yet to find out. But in the incident, two women were killed and four others were injured. It was sad and unfortunate, but our people are investigating. Our security authorities are investigating to unearth the motive behind this kind of issue.
In a separate incident last Sunday near Banton, Adekera says another violent incident occurred. Three unknown assailants opened fire on a commercial vehicle, killing a woman and injuring two others, about 8 kilometers south of Abyei. Adekera says the recent attacks threatened the relative peace and security of the Ngok Dinka and the Mesiria nomads. Abyei's Amiet market was established to enable the two communities of Ngok Dinka and Mesiria nomads to interact and coexist peacefully. Adekera says the attackers seemed bent on disrupting that peaceful coexistence.
It appeared they wanted the markets to close, but the people on the ground who are directly affected have seen what benefits they are reaping from the market, so they have done everything to sustain the market. Several meetings have been held between the Dinkas and the Mitrias, and there appears to be a common understanding that the market should continue.
Adekera says the attacks come at a time when the Amiet Common Market is helping rebuild harmony among the communities while helping to reduce commodity prices.
The cost of food items and daily items that anybody would need were very expensive because they used to come from far, from Port Sudan to Khartoum to Kadubi, down to wherever they could get them, so they were expensive. But now, both the Mitria community and other communities around have found a common ground where they are selling most of the food items, come to buy these things at a cheaper price.
Adekera says UNISFA considers these attacks on innocent civilians a blatant violation of the weapons-free status of the Abyei area. He stresses that any presence of armed groups within UNISFA's area of responsibility is a violation of its mandate, and the mission will not hesitate to engage forcefully with those engaged in such violations under the Chapter 7 mandate. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Today is Heroes Day in Kenya. President Uhuru Kenyatta marked the holiday honoring the nation's founders with a speech calling on all to respect their individual rights provided by the Constitution, including the right to participate in an election or not. Next week, Kenya holds a rerun of a national elections. The Supreme Court invalidated the results of the August polls. My colleague Vincent Macquarie says people are nervous about what lies ahead.
It's not possible to tell for sure whether there will be an election. And if there will be an election, many people are wondering, what shape would they take? And whatever results that come out of those elections, will they be credible? Will they be acceptable? And if not, then what next?
The news today that the election board chief Ezra Chiluba is taking a leave of absence adds to the uncertainty. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has demanded that Chiluba and other election officials resign before he will take part in the vote. As Vincent Macquarie points out, with less than a week before the vote, Chiluba's departure raises new questions.
Stepping aside at this time, how does it really benefit the process? It's just a few days to election. Will this satisfy the opposition to participate in the election? Will this inspire confidence in the electoral bodies?
Macquarie says the weekend should be fairly quiet in Kenya with no major political events planned. The South Sudan government has presented to UNESCO and the World Heritage Center the names of three heritage sites to be included on the first ever list of potential World Heritage Sites. Cultural Minister officials say the three designated sites could boost unity among South Sudanese and help the country generate income through tourism. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
In a letter submitted to UNESCO earlier this month, Cultural Ministry officials identified the Sud Waterland and the Boma Badinglo Migratory Landscape, both in former Jonglei State, and Damzuber Slavery Road site in former Western Bahr Ghazal State. South Sudan ratified the UNESCO World Heritage Convention in 2016. Atem Alfate, Deputy Head of Culture Department of South Sudan Culture, Youth and Sport Ministry, says they have worked closely with UNESCO to identify potential natural, cultural, and mixed heritage sites to be included in its national inventory of properties that have outstanding universal values.
South Sudanese need like something to connect them together. We just said that South Sudan are becoming the world heritage site with this bungalow or the Sud or the Amazibet. Even the social media, now people are talking about this. People are happy. There's something that connect people.
Ellen Lecker, who runs cultural programs at UNESCO in Juba, says the three sites are important to the entire world because they are in condition which highlights South Sudan's authentic values to humanity.
This is a great opportunity to look at, first of all, to get some positive news, to have something to smile about and be very proud as a South Sudanese. But on top of that, I think it speaks a lot about the potential for unity. Because these sites are national sites. They are talking about a common heritage for all South Sudanese.
The Sud Waterland represents one of the world's largest freshwater ecosystems with its network of channels, lagoons, and inundated areas. The Boma Badinglo Migratory Landscape hosts the second largest animal migration in the world in one of East Africa's most extensive savanna habitats. And Damzuber represents a historical slave trench from the 19th century, and it is associated with the North African, Arab, and Asian-led slave trade routes. The site includes a trench and a fortification where slaves were kept waiting to be transported to various destinations along the Nile River heading north. Lecker believes the sites will help develop South Sudan and attract tourists, which will boost the country's faltering economy.
It's an opportunity for generating income. Most of the positive impact of being on the World Heritage List is actually linked to tourism and awareness and public interest in the sites. From then onwards, there is also other resources that can be mobilized, including technical assistance and so on.
Lecker says South Sudan is entitled to use up to $4 million to assess other sites, but she acknowledged the ongoing conflict has made it difficult for cultural ministry officials to do that.
Even now, the MSIBER is like become a problem. If those guys said, okay, we give you this money, go and make an excavation and just get back the original image of this area, you would find difficulties because there's also like fighting there. There's like insecurity in that area.
Al-Fateh is calling on the South Sudan warring parties to end the fighting and work to unite the country. He points out that even if UNESCO approves the three sites as World Heritage Sites, tourists will never visit the country so long as the fighting continues. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The commander of a group of soldiers accused of killing a journalist, raping international aid workers, and looting property at the Terrain Hotel during a surge in violence in Juba last year has died. South Sudan military officials say First Lieutenant Luka Akachak was found dead in his jail cell nearly a week ago. His death is now just being reported. SPLA Deputy Spokesman Colonel Santo Domic says there was no sign of foul play, saying the commander died of natural causes. It is not clear if an autopsy was ever conducted. Akachek was a member of the Presidential Guard and a chief suspect in the case that highlighted the challenges of bringing perpetrators of human rights violations to justice in South Sudan. Akachek was accused by at least one alleged rape victim of instructing soldiers under his command to rape aid workers at the Terrain Hotel last July. Defense Attorney Philip Sun Yang says although Akachek's death comes as a shock, it will not deter efforts to prosecute the other defendants. He is also questioning the cause of death of the commander. The head of the National Democratic Movement is asking the Trump administration to rescue South Sudan from what he calls a total collapse. Lam Akol says the situation in South Sudan has not improved since fighting erupted in July 2016 when the Terrain Hotel attack occurred. Akol says the August 2015 peace deal has not been implemented, and he told this program there is no end in sight to the suffering of South Sudanese citizens. He is currently on a tour of the United States, meeting with various U.S. officials regarding the situation in South Sudan. And finally, the South Sudan Council of Churches says the upcoming IGAD-led high-level revitalization forum aimed at improving implementation of the 2015 peace deal should focus on the root causes of the South Sudan conflict and how it has affected ordinary citizens and not the interests of political leaders and their armies. The head of the council says once the fighting stops, the rapes and killing of innocent civilians should end. The Council of Churches General Secretary, Reverend James Oyet, says the church welcomes IGAD's efforts to resolve the conflict by revitalizing the peace deal, but says the upcoming forum should first focus on alleviating the suffering of the people. Reverend Oyet urges the government, the rebels, and various opposition parties to have the political will to end the conflict. Reverend Oyet also says the conflict has caused widespread insecurity, the collapse of South Sudan's economy, and has led to rampant human rights abuses, including targeted killings of unarmed civilians. Reverend Oyet says the church is leading an action plan for peace, which includes advocacy for peace and the creation of neutral forums where people can voice their grievances to try to achieve healing and reconciliation. He says it is imperative that the government allow more freedom of expression and freedom for the media so that citizens can talk about their grievances without fear. He says that can be done through conversations on the radio and on other media outlets. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday, when I'll leave you with the song Junub Sudan by Addison Rob Momo. CJ Uman. Junubia. Hey. Junubia. Neligo pini aki simto giafa. Neligo pini alonto giafa. Bini azei malaika ane tukuwe na tai watako bini ake mili futuku junubia been listening to CJ Oman with the song Junubia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. What do you think about our show? Give us your feedback. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Masaras tai kumlu, you know be ah ah oh.